Today's class is dealing with the contemporary issue of religious perspectives on non-observant Jews. This is a very important question because I suspect that the vast majority of people that we all know in terms of Jewish acquaintances, well, not the vast majority, but a significant number of people that we all know are non-observant people. I consciously avoided using the expression non-religious Jews because I'm not sure that it's for anybody to really make a judgment as to who is ultimately spiritually connected or religious and what have you. Even though, of course, religious means, you know, we know what religious means, but I used a slightly more power of expression, which is non-observant Jews, which is a fairly objective thing. There are certain mitzvahs in the Torah that most Jewish people don't know about, most Jewish people don't keep, they don't care about. The levels of education in the Jewish world as a whole are unbelievably low, unspeakably low. The amount of ignorance is incredible. Most people have no idea what they don't even know, and have no idea that there could be anything like the amount of information that there is. And therefore, we have to work out from a Jewish halachic perspective, how do we deal with that? Because the Torah deals often with people who do averas, people who do sins of different kinds. And there are certain reactions that are required from the community to such people. Do today's non-observant Jewish people fall in any way within the same categorizations? Because the reason that they're not observant is a really quite different reason to reasons in the past that people have chosen that path. So I want to basically divide the shir into two. One half deals with what people do, the fact that people don't keep mitzvahs. They don't keep Shabbos, they don't keep kosher, etc. And then I want to talk about the questions of beliefs, of hashkofas, and we'll talk about that when we get there. First of all, have a look at number one. Number one is a posik in Yeshua, which is dealing with Achan, when Achan takes from the booty of Jericho, when he's not allowed to. They're told not to touch, not to take any of the spoils, and he takes them and he hides them, and he's the only one. He's the only person who does that. Nevertheless, the Pasuk says, God says to Yeshua, number one, Chata Yisrael. The Jews have sinned, okay? Gam Avru Esbrisi, and they've broken my covenant, Asher Tzivisi Oysam, Vagam Lakhu Min Acherim, they've taken from the spoils, Vagam Ganvu, they've stolen, Vagam Kichashu, and they've denied their guilt, Vagam Samu Bechaleihem, and they've hidden away in their tents and things like that. The truth is that there are a few things coming out of this Pasuk. One of them is that even though only one person had done it, the whole Jewish people is accused of having sinned, which is interesting. From this we see the concept of Kol Yisrael Arevim Zevazeh, that when one part of the Jewish people doesn't perform, then all of us are in the same boat. It's not like you can drill a hole under your private seat in the boat and say, don't bother me, I'm just drilling a hole under my seat. That's not how it works. Everyone goes down together. So that's the first thing, but that's not really why I'm bringing this particular posik. The point is, it says, Chata Yisrael, the Jews have sinned. And it doesn't say the more prosaic way of saying it, which is Yisrael Chata. Yisrael Chata. Normally you put the object before the verb. Okay? Hayeled Holech. Hayeled Holech Lechanuyot. The boy goes to the shops. You don't say, Holech Hayeled Lechanuyot. It's a bit more kind of highfalutin, a bit more poetic. So the Chazal pick up on this and say, why have you inverted the order? Now on a pshat level, you could say, because that's how, you know, a very poetic way of speaking, but on a drash level, the Chazal learned something out in the Gemara Sanhedrin. Chata Yisrael. Amar Rabbi Abba Razavda, Apal Pisha Chata Yisrael. Even after the chet is still Yisrael. They're learning that out from here. It doesn't say Yisrael, the Jews, Chata, the sin. It's Chata Yisrael, that even after the chet, the Jews are still Jews. And you get from this the principle that a person can never not be Jewish. They can never throw off their Jewishness. No matter what you do in life, in terms of an Aveira, you're always going to be Jewish. In the sense that you're never released from the obligation to keep mitzvahs. Even if a person intermarried, a person still is Jewish. A person has not left the Jewish people in that sense. Now, there may be certain things that a person can do that, if you like, cuts them off from the community, and they may not be part of the Jewish community in some ways, and that's an interesting discussion, which is maybe not for right now, although we can talk about it today. But in principle, once you're Jewish, you can never stop being Jewish, even to the point that if a person converts to Judaism, The minute after they convert, they decide, I don't want to be Jewish anymore, it's too late. Have a look at number three. Tavol, the convert goes to the mikveh, va'ala, and he comes out of the mikveh. Harihuki Yisrael Achal Zvarav, he's a complete Jew in every respect. No sense less than a Jew. So the Gemara says, Lamai Hilchasa. So what are you telling me? I mean, obviously, he comes out of the mikveh, he's Jewish. Why are you telling me this halacha? My hilchasa means you're telling me something obvious. The Gemara answers here, no, the chiddush is like this. The e hader bay, because if he then goes back on his Judaism, 5 minutes after the mikveh, he says, you know something, I made a terrible, terrible error. I want to go back to being a Christian like I was 10 minutes ago. And now, umakadesh bas Yisrael, and then he gets married, but he decides to marry a Jewish girl, even though he's revoked his Judaism, after having been Jewish for 5 minutes. Yisrael Mumakarin, we call him a non-religious Jew. Okay? The Kiddushin Kiddushin. Kiddushav Kiddushin. And his marriage is a marriage. even to the point that you could say, well, this guy hasn't been Jewish his entire life. He was Jewish for 5 minutes and then he said, I don't want to be Jewish anymore. Doesn't matter. Once you're Jewish, you're Jewish, you're Jewish. You can be the Pope and you're still Jewish. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, go on.
Why are there not, like, you know, conflicts in different communities and in that also about people who converted and then, I don't know, not being religious,
like I'm
saying, and then they had children and everything, and like the children
were Jewish. Right, so these conversion issues are very tricky. These conversion issues are very tricky because, without getting into the whole conversion debate, in principle, it's not hard to convert, in principle. All we need to know, although it actually is in practice very hard to convert, but in principle, in theory, all we need to do is we need to be quite confident that you really want to be Jewish. Once we're quite confident you really want to be Jewish, so then you go to the mikveh, and if you're a man, you have a bris milah, and you're done. Or the other way around, you have a bris milah, and you go to the mikveh. So the bris milah bit is relatively straightforward, even though a little painful. The tefillah bit is relatively straightforward, and much less painful. The hard bit is, we just need to know that you want to be Jewish. Now, at a time in history when there was only one option, I want to be Jewish clearly means this, it cannot mean anything else. So fine, so a person wants to be Jewish, then we know what you mean, so we can, you don't have to teach a convert everything. The convert learns a few basic things, and then they learn the rest once they're Jewish. That's in theory. In practice, today the problem is like this. The statement, I want to be Jewish, as a convert today, is a meaningless statement. 500 years ago, it had only one meaning. But today, what does that mean? I want to be Jewish. I want to be culturally Jewish. I want to eat bagels and lox. I want to be part of the Jewish people because I like the Jewish people. I want to be Reform, Conservative, Orthodox, Modern Orthodox, Haredi, Deconstructionist, Humanist, Fundist, Socialist, Zionist, Anti-Zionist. Like, you know, the menu of choices now for I want to be Jewish is so long that no longer has any real meaning. So now what we do is we need to be, okay, so show me what you mean when you say you want to be Jewish. Learn. Keep mitzvahs, because we need to know that you mean that you want to be Jewish, i.e. mitzvah observant, the Torah requires a Jew to keep mitzvahs. We need to know that's what you mean. So today, when a person converts, they have to go through a much more elaborate procedure to show that they really mean that they want to be Jewish. Now, then, if 5-10 years later, that person is no longer religious. So now we always have the question, and every case is going to be a different case, there's no one rule fits all. Is the fact that they're not religious today proof of the fact that they never really wanted to be Jewish, and they never really meant we wanted to be Jewish, in which case the conversion is not valid? Or does it just mean they did want to be Jewish, and now they changed their mind? In which case the conversion is totally valid, like it says here. And that's why sometimes and often it's not clear, you dig into it and you're not sure, well, they converted this way and that way, and then we're not sure what they wanted, and the rabbi. And that's why conversion has become a very murky business. But in principle, if a person really wanted to be Jewish, converted, and then 15 minutes later didn't want to be Jewish anymore, okay, so the conversion is a valid conversion. In practice, that often is itself evidence of the conversion. Not like somebody turns around and says, I really desperately want to be Jewish, desperately want to be Jewish. And then 5 minutes after they've converted to Judaism, they're completely non-religious, and they get a start and they say, I now want to marry this Jewish guy. Like, what conclusions am I meant to draw from that? You really did want to be Jewish, but you changed your mind 5 minutes later and found a guy you fancied marrying? Or was the whole thing just a subterfuge because you want to marry this Jewish guy? That's really what happens now.
What if they
Does it change anything if a person then goes and marries someone not Jewish?
Yeah. It doesn't change their Jewishness. They're now married out as well.
Okay.
Shkoyach. Good. You'd have been better off not being Jewish and marrying a non-Jewish girl than being Jewish and marrying a non-Jewish girl. Anyway, I want to move on because I'm just at the beginning. Yes.
But what's the answer? Let's say they found out that they were doing the wrong reasons, like to get married, did it provoke their Jewishness? Okay, you found out that
Every case is different. Every case is different. Does it revoke their Jewishness? There's no one size fits all. It depends on the person, depends on the rabbi, depends on the case. Every case is different. So I'm not even going to dip my little toe into the controversial world of conversions. I don't want to get even involved in it. I didn't even want to talk about it. But just so that you understand that the confusion today is due to the "I want to be Jewish" is much less of a meaningful statement than it was in the time perhaps of the Gemara when Jewish was only one thing. Fine. So the first point is Jewish and you can't leave it behind. However, there are people who reject aspects of their Judaism, and there is, if you like, a sliding scale of different levels of seriousness. Now, I'm not going through all the halachas, but we need to work out just a little bit how what these are. Three, I put here Aleph through to Vav, of different kinds of rejection that a person can make. Now, a person could do an Issa B'Shogeg. Shogeg means a person accidentally broken a mitzvah. Usually in my meal weren't aware that it was prohibited, no one had ever told them. Somebody, you know, makes a cup of tea with a tea bag on Shabbos from an urn. And somebody goes, "What are you doing? You're breaking Shabbos." The answer is, "I didn't know, no one ever told me that I couldn't make tea this way." They broke Shabbos at the shogeg. There is no suggestion that someone who is a shogeg has in any way left the Jewish people. Everybody makes mistakes. How are you meant to know something before you know it? You should have perhaps made it your business to know Shabbos better. It's not guilt-free. It's not called an oines. Oines is where something happens to me completely against my will. There's nothing I could do about it. Here, shogeg is you're guilty, you should have known better, but of course, you know, okay, to try harder next time. All of us do this all of the time, and shogeg, therefore, is an important status. You do tshuva, and you move on. Of course, there are consequences. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, sometimes you had to bring a korban for being shogeg. So it's not like a zero, but it's not in any way a rejection. Then there's a bala veira. A bal aveira, also called a rosha, and a rosha is, don't think of sort of, you know, when they have the Arba Bonim on Seder night and there's pictures of all the four sons, yeah. And there's the chacham and there's the rosha, and he's like some kind of some evil king, you know, guy with a little moustache, you know, some sort of jaunty cigarette poking out of his mouth at an angle, you know, these kind of illustrated haggadahs. That's not what I mean by a rosha. A rosha technically is somebody who is a bal aveira, who does an aveira on purpose. In other words, I know it's prohibited, I know it's wrong, and you know something? Leave me alone. We've all got our problems, this is my issue, this is my Yetzirah, I did it, I've done it, fine. A bal aveira is also clearly part of the Jewish people, but they have to do tshuva, and they have a certain status. And again, all of us fall into this category for different aveiras. It's not like a one-size-fits-all status. You don't get a label on your head, Rosha. You know, all of us are guilty of a certain intentional sins that we did. And the question is, how bad, you know, how much do you need to know to be a Rosha? Yes?
I guess my question was going to be, like, is there a level of, like, specific, you know, like, sins that, like, is there a scale of, like, what you do wrong?
Yes, so clearly certain things are worse than other things. But in theory, any prohibition of somebody who turns around and says, "I'm not going to wear tefillin today," that's also an aveira. They have a mitzvah to wear tefillin. They did an aveira.
It doesn't
give them the title of a rasha. It does. They did. They broke a mitzvah in a Torah on purpose. Again, rasha is not a title that means you're damned for life. Rasha just means that you've done an aveira, and now you have to deal with it. You can't hide behind the fact that you knew what you were doing. You didn't know what you were doing. You did it. You know, live up to it, do tshuva, and move on. You know, you can always do tshuva for anything. Obviously, some aveiras are more serious than that. So, you know, somebody who broke Shabbos. Someone who killed somebody, God forbid. No, it's a lot harder to do tshuva for that because you can't bring them back. Mm-hmm. But that's also someone who's like this. And every aveira is different. Obviously, you can't equate not putting tefillin on with killing someone, God forbid. You know, it's a different scale. But
is there like any leeway for like someone who's like a bal tshuva, someone who's growing?
Ah, but they have their shogeg. Someone who's I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
good. So I didn't want to get into that, but yes, absolutely, because it's a long-term project. And the truth is, not just for a bal tshuva. Without getting into this, all of us do things wrong and do them wrong in the knowledge that we're doing them wrong, but do them wrong because we say, look, we're on a journey. And even though today I might not do this right, I'm going to do this right eventually. All of us. It's not a Bar Chuva thing. Every single Jew who goes to Shul on Yom Kippur and does this business the whole day, if they're thinking about what they're saying, they know full well that come the next morning they are still going to do Averus. They're not saying I'll never do an Avera again. Because if they're saying that, then they're just kidding themselves. What they should be saying is, I am going to do Averus, but you know something? I'm now on a path. I've got a plan. That tomorrow I'll still do this, but the next day I won't do this anymore. And then the next day I won't do that anymore. Yeah? All of us are like this. Now, in the case of someone who is a quote-unquote Baal Tshuva, that curve is like very steep, because they're doing a lot of different things. And it's like, you know, pushing open a door, which is on a tight hinge. You know, the first couple of inches is really easy, and the further you're going, like the more you have to push to move less and less and less and less and less. That's why everybody's really a Baal Tshuva. It's harder and harder, not easier and easier. It's easy to give up the big things because it's a big change really quickly. It's much harder to give up the really hard things because that's when it really becomes hard. Right. Then we have a category of people that the Gemara talks about. We have to work out who these people are. There's a mumle te'ovan. A mumle te'ovan is someone who rejects a mitzvah completely. And they say, I'm not going to do this anymore. Not just, I did an avera because I couldn't help it. I'm not going to eat kosher anymore. I'm just not going to do it. They're a mumma, they reject the mitzvah. But the te'avon, what's the te'avon? For appetite, the te'avon, yeah? But the te'avon means they're not doing it to be dafka or to rebel. They're doing it because it's just too hard. They say, look, I've got a good job, I've got to eat out with clients, I've got to go to trade restaurants, just leave me alone, you know? I'm just not going to keep kosher because it doesn't fit with my lifestyle, I'm sorry. That was what you would call a mumma le te'avon. A mushaloy le te'avon is someone who gives up a mitzvah with no good reason. A mumalit lahachis is like even more serious. And once we're getting into this category, you're talking about people who in many situations have lost some of their, or many of their rights as a Jew in the Jewish community. I'm not getting into all of this now, but a mumalit lahachis is someone who rejects a mitzvah like to spite God almost. A rebellious mumma. The classic example is a mumalit te'avon. Someone who is, if there's a piece of pork and a piece of chicken in front of them, they'll eat whichever is tastier. A mumala hachis is even if the chicken is tastier, they'll dafka eat the pork. There are people like that in the world. Okay. That's even more serious. A mumala te'avon la'avodah zara, the Gemara talks about somebody who, even for te'avon, for saying I can't help it, they start worshipping avodah zara. A machalel shabbos befarahesia. Someone who is a public Shabbos breaker. The Gemara has very serious things to say about that. They say they have a status of a non-Jew. They've left. They're not really a non-Jew in the sense that they can't now say, well, I'm a non-Jew, I can do what I like. But for halachic purposes, we treat them often as a non-Jew because they have rejected Shabbos so publicly. And Shabbos is not like any other mitzvah. Somebody who says, I'm not going to keep the mitzvah Shabbos anymore because it's just, you know, Calvin Klein is my thing and everything is Shabbos and I can't help it. Okay, that's not good, but Shabbos. Shabbos goes to the root of the Jewish people. We've been so desensitized to Chilul Shabbos. We think, yeah, okay, some people drive on Shabbos, some people don't drive on Shabbos. When we see people drive on Shabbos, we should feel like a sense of like a shock. Like, did you see what I just saw? Somebody drove on Shabbos. That's how we should feel about people who drive on Shabbos, in theory, okay?
What about, like, breaking Shabbos
privately? Oh, so that's not befarahesia, okay? So that's already a lower level. It's still breaking Shabbos, but it's not publicly. And the question is, what does public mean? If you wouldn't do it in front of somebody, you'd be embarrassed, like a rabbi came along, is that called public, or is that called public? It's a whole debate. A mumul achol mitzvah is someone who becomes basically secular. And finally, an apikoros. An apikoros is somebody who rejects certain key beliefs of Judaism. We'll deal with what they are in a moment. All of these people, on some level, and don't start fitting any of the people you know into these categories because you won't be right. But in principle, in the classic categorization, this is how the Gemara, this is how the Halacha looks at people. You're a Shogeg, you're a Balavira, you're a Mumala Te'avon, you're a Mumala Hachas, you're an Apikoros, something like that. Different people fit into different boxes. And again, nobody's judging people. This is not about kind of, you're better than me, he's worse than him. It's not about that. It's about trying to work out halachically how I relate to people. For example, Mitzvah's Bein Adam L'Chaveira, which you learn about. Very often when you learn, do you all learn mitzvahs about Ben Adam L'Chaveira? So you'll know that the Ben Adam L'Chaveira mitzvahs often use different descriptions of the person who gets the benefit. The ahavta le reecha kamocha. That's a reya. Lo sisna es achicha bilgavecha. Don't hate your brother in your heart. Be tzedek tishpot amitecha. Sometimes it says amitecha, sometimes it says achicha, sometimes it says amecha, sometimes it says reecha. These are not synonyms. If you go through and analyze it, I'm not going to because I haven't got time, it's too technical. Each of those descriptions is a different kind of person. Like once you're this, then you're no longer achicha, once you're this, then you're no longer reecha. Different mitzvahs kick in or kick out. It's not about judging people, it's about knowing which mitzvahs I have to do for other people. Do I have to return your lost property? If you're an apikoros, not you. If someone's an apikoros, do I have to return their lost property? Do they count for a minion? It might be non-judgmental completely, but there are halakhic ramifications. Yes.
Is that who actively rejects key beliefs, or oblivious?
We'll talk about that. We'll talk about that exact point. Yes.
How do you translate the word mumar?
Mumar is a rebel. A rebel. Now, there are now cases that we have to try and work out where they fit in. I put here underneath the vav. What about a ben mumar? Meaning, they didn't reject anything, but their parents did, so they were brought up like that. What about a klipa machmas tos? This is really your point that you just made, Tel. What about someone who denies key Torah beliefs, but because they made a mistake? Or because they were oblivious? A klipa shechunach lekbira. You were brought up thinking that God is a religious fantasy, and religion is the opiate of the masses, and Moses was a mythical figure. You were brought up this way, and religious Jews are medieval, obscurantist, all this kind of stuff.
Or you just weren't taught anything.
Or if you just put a blank sheet, completely, blank. How does that work? And what about a tinok shenishba, this very famous expression, the classic case of literally the case of a child who was stolen as a baby and is now brought up bein agoyim, a tinok shenishba bein agoyim, and they discover at a certain point in life that they are Jewish and they never even knew they were Jewish. Do we hold them to liable in any way for all the things that they did when they didn't even know they were Jewish? So some of these fit more with the people that we have today, and I want to talk a little bit now about our current situation, because I want to divide this in two. What about what people do? All those people around you, now you can start thinking about all those non-religious, non-observant, I should say, people that you know, that they don't keep this and they don't keep this, and some of them kind of keep Shabbos, and most of them don't keep Shabbos at all, and most of them do, and some are married out, and some of this and some of that. How do we, as a religious community, what is our perspective on that? So, there's one important thing that we need to start with, which is as follows. In number four, an intentional sinner requires certain things. Hasone shenema b'Torah. The Torah, in theory, says you're allowed to have sina. Now, sina doesn't really mean hatred, but it's a certain level of rejection. For lifestyle rejection, for someone who is a rosha, who does things on purpose. So the Rambam makes it clear. Amru chachamim kagoyim. The case is like this: Shirao levado she'avar aveira. You saw them doing the aveira, the hatrabai, and you gave them a warning. You told them that the aveira is osa. V'loy chada, but they refused to listen. Hariz a mitzvah. Listen, then there's a mitzvah to reject. Actually, after tshuva, so they do tshuva v'yachzor mirishay, and they repent from their wickedness. It's clear from the halacha that a person can only be a rosha if they've been warned, if they've been told, if they know what they're doing. You can't be called a rosha if what you're doing is without understanding of the seriousness of what it is or that it's prohibited. That's very clear. And therefore, if a person does an aveira without having been told that it's an aveira, they're called a shogate. Okay? Now, that might be true of things that no one knows about. Is that true of things that everybody knows about? So that's already not so clear. Let's say, do non-religious, the non-observant Jews need to be told that Jews don't eat pork? Is there a Jew in the world that knows that Jews that Jews have an issue with pork? Maybe, could be. There are people that just are completely oblivious. But they don't know that you can't do borer on Shabbos. They don't know anything about Shabbos. They don't know anything. They might not even know about driving on Shabbos. Like they might think that's weird. Like Moses didn't have a car, did he? Which is an entirely reasonable thing to say. Moses didn't switch on the light. So why is it like? How can that be in the Torah? I mean, it's very hard to say that people know about that. On the other hand, if you eat a piece of pork, you would have thought people know about that. So maybe you could turn around and say, well, they didn't need to be told that. Surely they know that. But the Rambam goes further. It comes to a question in a minute, Carly. Number 5 at the top of the page. Look at this Rambam. Really fascinating. Avar Avera. Let's say someone does an Avera, says the Rambam. But Yodea Shehi Beloi Sateh, and they know it's a prohibition in the Torah. Aval Eini Yodea Shechai V'Malei Karei. But they don't know how serious it is. They don't realize it's Karei. Harizish Shkaka. That's called Shogeg as well. Or maybe chassas, and they bring in a korban for someone who's a shogeg. Let's say somebody breaks Shabbos, and they know that it's prohibited on Shabbos, but no one ever told them this was chayav kores and what kores is. Said the Rambam, they're not doing it on purpose, even though they're doing it on purpose, but they don't understand what they're doing. They think they're doing X, but really they're doing something much more serious, and because they don't understand that, then that's also called a shogeg. Now, if that's the case, even the people who think that they know what they're breaking, do they know what they're breaking? Like people who know that ultra-Orthodox people don't drive on Shabbos. Oh yeah, I know that ultra-Orthodox people don't drive on Shabbos. And they do drive on Shabbos. They understand what the consequences of that are. They know what the... They haven't been educated. They just don't know. So I think there's a very strong argument. I saw one more point to make and then I'll go on. A very strong argument that pretty much in terms of what people do when they're not keeping mitzvahs, it's very hard to find people out there who call themselves non-observant, who are actually doing things clearly on purpose. Now, there will be exceptional cases, people who really know what they're doing. And I'm not talking about some teenager that goes off the derech and like they really understand exactly, you know, what they're doing. But there will be some people that know what they're doing, and they're doing it on purpose, and they're real old-time, happy chorusim, you know. Hard to find. The Jewish society used to be full. There used to be people in Jewish society 100 years ago who grew up completely in the yeshivas and they in Eastern Europe, etc., etc. And they smoked cigarettes on Shabbos afternoon as they learned Gemara with each other. There used to be such people.
It still exists, actually. There's this whole phenomenon called texting on Shabbos, which certain rabbis are giving permission for in some yeshivas in America.
They're giving permission? That's already
a... Because they said it's like necessary and it's like... It's happening anyway. I've heard this song.
Look, there is a phenomenon of people who are texting on Shabbos.
Yeah.
But you know something? It's certainly something which is prohibited on Shabbos. There's no question about that. How you deal with individual people who are facing challenges in different religious areas is, of course, an individual issue. You can't make rules for everybody. But they're not even the kind of people. The kind of people who are doing that tend to be, you know, kids. They tend to be people who are, let's face it, almost clinically addicted to their phones. I mean, almost clinically addicted, if not addicted to their phones. And they're not people, the people I'm talking about who were smoking cigarettes, learning Gemara on Shabbos, they're people who have a deep understanding of what Shabbos is, and they don't care. And I don't think the people that you're talking about who are taking on Shabbos fall into that category at all. What's more, the Chazon Ish says in number 6, okay?
Right.
Yeah, just one second, I'll take a question in just one minute. I just want to read number 6, because he says... Ubagos Maimonides in Perek Vav Hilchos Deos. He brings a commentary. He says, "Kasav de'ein rishayim lisnoisai ela achar she'enu makabel tochacha." The only time you're allowed to reject a person because they did an avera is after you gave them tochacha, meaning you gave them rebuke. They rejected it, like the Rambam says, "I don't care." Ubesoy sefer avas chesed kasav, and he quotes the Chofetz Chaim in the name b'shem of Yaakov Merlin, who is already old. The mitzvah le'ev is a rishayim mehaytam. Today we have a mitzvah even to love everybody, even rishayim, even people who do averus. Why? The heavy can be tshuvas ha'maram Lublin, a very old source. Ki etzleinu heim kodem tochacha. Nobody's called somebody who had a tochacha today. She'ein anu yodim lochiach, because we don't know how to give tochacha. But dainin and loka anusim. He says an even more interesting thing, which is even if you think that they know what they're doing. And even if you think you gave them tochacha, you probably didn't give them tochacha because we don't know how to do it properly. So whatever you did to them wasn't real tochacha, so they don't really know what they're doing and therefore they're a shogeg. Very interesting. It's very hard to find people that actually break mitzvahs. unless they're people who are basically frum. Which is a bit scary really, because the frum you are, the more averus you end up doing. Which is probably how it should be. In terms of the way you think of it, anyway. Yes?
I remember on Shabbat, I was like reading through, I just read a whole page, looking through like past the dust or whatever, and I was saying something about how like somebody who studied Torah and doesn't keep his commandments or whatever is worse than somebody who's an idolater or whatever.
Okay.
And that,
you have to read things in context.
No, I know that, but it was just like, no, because now kind of, because it makes me think that, like, okay, well, like, I'm sure there are a lot of Jews out there who know that there are a lot of, like, 613, this is what I can't do that, so it's already better for them not to even, like,
What it means, what that's talking about, someone who studies Torah doesn't keep Torah, it means somebody who is into learning on a deep level as an academic study, which is interesting and academically, you know, and they know all the Gemaras and the Rashis and the Tosfos and things like that, but they're not doing it with any intention of connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They're doing it as like a Jewish studies situation. That already is a misuse, it's an abuse of Torah. It's not talking... you're very optimistic about how much Torah is taught in high schools.
Tanakh
and
class,
Tanakh. People know Tanakh so much. The Datilumi schools teach Tanakh. I don't know how much Tanakh is taught in in everywhere else. Maybe. Certainly, I don't think you could turn around and take Israel. You know, there was a famous, I don't know who said it, so famous, I can't remember who said it, but somebody stood up in the Knesset many years ago, one of the really anti-religious, you know, whatever, and said, we tried to raise a generation of apikorsim, but we succeeded in raising a generation of amoratsim. Meaning, we were hoping our children would, you know, be anti-religious and reject from knowledge, but actually no one's rejecting anything anymore. And by the way, this is really true. There's been a massive, the religious world often fights the battles of 70 years ago. You often hear of the battle against anti-religious, anti-Torah, anti-Haredi, Zion, like these people, there are a few, like, academic figures or left-wing media figures or a lot of, you know, the vast majority of people don't know enough to reject anything about anybody. What they know is political, it's in the newspapers, it's sociological, it's about going to the army. It's nothing to do with religion. No one knows any religion. People are actually very open to religion. Very open to religion in secular society in Israel today. So we often, you know, make the mistake of thinking like everyone out there is a Fabrenta, like a burning anti-religious campaigner. You know, that's not the case anymore. Okay. Anyway, in terms of halacha, it seems pretty clear that the attitude of religious Jews to non-observant Jews is not that they're breaking halacha; it's just that they're shogeg.
Somebody who actually gets that realization that you've reached of as you move forward, it gets harder. There's more, and you're more responsible, and they just kind of want to take a break. That's part of their Russia.
It's an individual choice. Okay. Everybody, look. If you're asking this question, how do you tell somebody? How do you advise people as to how to do tshuva? So there's like no two faces are the same. No two neshamas are the same. Everyone needs a different. You know, when do you need a break from this and that? Everyone's different. You need Atelecha Rab, Kinelecha Chaver. Get yourself good advisors, get yourself good friends, and get yourself on a path of long-term growth. Everybody's growth, if they're doing it right, will look like this. Won't it?
Yeah.
Whose growth looks like this? Only in picture books.
Yeah.
And biographies of great people that never actually did the things that they tell them that they did. Yeah? Real people are like this. That's how it works. So sometimes you're in that phase, but, you know, that's how life is. Now, much more interesting is the second question. Okay, fine. When it comes to Shabbos, of course people who drive on Shabbos because they know anything about Shabbos, they're not really breaking Shabbos. They're not really breaking Shabbos. Which, by the way, makes it a little bit interesting if you teach people all about Hilchos Shabbos and they still don't keep Shabbos. You didn't necessarily do them any favors.
Yeah.
Okay? Yeah.
So, I guess it's kind of about what you're saying right now. Like, what does it mean actually to, like, understand how serious something is? Is that, like, you go to someone and, like, obviously it's not like you go to someone and say, like, oh, you really should keep Shabbos, you know, like, you're Jewish. Obviously
right.
They don't get it.
Right.
But, like, what does it really mean to, like, understand how serious it is? To understand the punishment?
No, it's more than just understand the punishment. It's to be plugged in to an understanding of what Torah is and what the meaning is and what it means to go against an Avera and what it means to disconnect oneself from God to a certain degree. And also, you know, the Chazanish is saying that really because none of us can give tochacha, that means none of us can really communicate to somebody else how serious it is what they're doing and how awful it is for their neshama. No, we can't communicate that. And therefore, since they don't really understand that, he's basically said it's very hard to find any Rishayim these days, anywhere. Now, it's an interesting thing. I was just thinking of something. Yeah, everybody thinks that one of the most important things when it comes to non-observant people is very often they don't feel that halacha applies to them. Right. Well, it's true and it's not true. Someone needs their car fixing. It's all right. In a sense, you're right. You're wrong. Because let's say a person never did any avera because they never knew what they were doing. But they never did any mitzvah either.
But it doesn't work that way.
If you're basically disconnected and nothing that you're doing is an avera because you're not connected to God anyway, then you don't know what you're doing, then it's difficult. If you get in bed, if you don't get out of bed the whole day, then there are very few averas that you're going to do.
Right.
But there are very few mitzvahs you're going to do either. So it's still much better to try and educate people that they do need to keep mitzvahs and there is something to offer for them so that they will hopefully connect with it. That's definitely the case.
So you're saying that, this is a question. Like, that someone who's, a non-religious Jew, but they're, if you, mitzvah, they don't know how far they're, a good person, whatever, you're saying that, you're not really doing mitzvahs?
It depends. Depends on what the kavanah is. You're going to ask me a question. Somebody who is a vowed atheist, but they help other people, and they do chesed, but they don't believe in God. Now, one can't argue with the fact that they did a nice thing, and they did they built society in some way. It's very hard to say how that was a mitzvah. They were makayim a mitzvah. Mitzvah implies that I understand that I'm a mitzvah. I'm obligated. Something obligates me to do this, and that is a connection with God. Now, okay, no one can see anyone else's neshama, and nobody knows anybody else's belief in God. And there are many people out there that really do believe in God. They just don't really believe in this kind of God or that kind of God. And it could, I'm not for one second saying that nothing any non-observant person did was a mitzvah. Certainly not saying that. But it depends on the situation.
So in order to do mitzvah, you have to have the intention of doing it with God in mind?
Well, mitzvah means someone has commanded me to do this. I'm doing this because I'm fulfilling an obligation that God put on me. That's what mitzvah means.
Yeah.
It doesn't just mean helping another Jew. I know the word do a mitzvah, help another Jew. The word mitzvah can often mean that in secular terms. But really, halakhically, a mitzvah means a connection with God. It's like an averis, a disconnection with God. And if you're going to argue, you're not doing averis because you're not disconnecting yourself from God because you don't know anything about what you're doing. So you're not really connecting yourself with God either. That's why it's much better to educate people. Otherwise, why would we bother? Let's just turn around and say, and by the way, there are some people in the religious world who do turn around and say, just leave everybody out there, don't worry about them, because that's not your problem. It seems that it is a problem, because the Jewish people as a whole have to, do mitzvahs, and we have to help people to do that. If you take a non-religious Israeli, they'll say, why don't you keep Shabbat? They'll say, I do keep Shabbat. It says on my calendar, Shabbat, Yom Chamishi, Yom Shishi, Shabbat. I go to the mall, and I go to the theatre, and I go to the cinema, and I go and see my friends. I don't keep Shabbat Shel Haridim. I don't keep that. And that's why it's important to say, Shabbat is Shabbat for everybody. I know a very interesting case of a situation where there was a hotel manager who was running a hotel on Shabbos where the pool was open on Shabbos. And this was a bit of an issue because there was lots of Chilul Shabbos, there were lots of religious people, irreligious, non-religious people, non-observant people in the pool, in the bikinis, of course. So you wouldn't go in the pool in your Shabbos suit, would you? And this was always a sore point with the Hashgacha, with the Kashrus people, because we're giving a Hashgacha to a hotel. So anyway, so one day, he told me this story, this guy, a new rabbi took over the Kashrus of this area. And the rabbi called him in for a meeting. And he said, "Oi." So this is it, I'm going to get it in the neck now. They're going to close my hotel down because they're going to take away my hechsher because of the pool open on Shabbos. So he called him and he sat him down. He said, we have a bit of a problem with your hotel, don't we? He goes, "Well, yeah, what's the problem? Your pool is open. And, while people are sitting in these mirrors, singing Yom Zeh Mechubad Mikol Yamim, there are other people doing butterfly stroke in the pool and playing beach ball in the pool. So how do we do that?" So he says, "So what are you going to do? You're going to take away my hechsher?" He says, "No. I'm going to allow you to keep your hechsher, but on one condition." So he says, "What's the condition?" He says, when the people are having food and keeping Shabbos in the restaurant, you have to take complimentary food out to the people in the pool and say, this is compliments of the hotel, we're wishing you a good Shabbos. Because I want you to communicate to them that even if they're in the pool, it's Shabbos still. It's Shabbos. And if they're in the pool, it's also Shabbos for them. There's not Shabbos for the Haredim inside, but for them it's Saturday." There's something very important in that. It's also the issue of going to, and again, every case is different, going to an intermarriage if a relative intermarries. And again, every case is different and needs to be looked at separately. But really, one of the issues is you don't want to communicate the fact that intermarriage is prohibited for me because I'm religious. But it's not prohibited for you because you're not observant. So you can intermarry, but I can't intermarry. There has to be somehow a communication that just like I can't intermarry, you can't intermarry either, even though you're not observant. But of course, then, that doesn't mean you're going to cut yourself off. There's all sorts of... But that has to be communicated. That's very important. Yes?
Like, the synagogue that I went to growing up, they didn't teach us, like, laws. It was Reconstructionist, very spiritual and cultural. And they taught us, like, certain prayers and, like, the concept of a mitzvah, but they didn't say anything about, like, averas and sins. So, I mean, sort of like what Carly was saying, can you, like... What do you do about that balance of like you know that you could do a mitzvah but you don't know that you could also do an avera?
But you said you know that there are mitzvahs, but no one ever told you about averas.
Yeah, you only know like one side, you know.
I suppose, you know, that's a good side to teach people, I suppose. look, if somebody thinks that, you know, that I'm doing a mitzvah for God, I'm doing a mitzvah, and this is something that is, you know, spiritually correct and building. The Reconstructionists can say different things, and doesn't have to be God involved. God is not a necessary part of the thing. It doesn't have to be. Maybe. Okay.
I mean, here it was. It was just they only showed like one side of it, so I could have been, you know, like thinking that like when I was breaking Shabbos, I was okay.
Right.
When I was saying Shema, I was like even better.
All right, so your teachers were very clever. Your teachers were very clever. They got you to do the mitzvahs, and they prevented you from doing the averus. Maybe they were really ultra orthodox people, and they were doing it.
They were pretending. I'm doing averus. I'm saying I still broke Shabbat.
No, but you didn't because you never knew it was wrong.
Right.
I have to write send them an email. Look, there's no question that if. It's better to not break Shabbat than to break Shabbat b'shogeg. Breaking Shabbat b'shogeg still creates a negativity on some level, but you're not to blame. Anyway, let's go on. Because I may finish this next time, because I don't want to leave this in the air. When it comes to apikorsis, when it comes to deus, when it comes to understanding basic, if you like, intellectual or emunah, faith issues, what do we say? So a very famous Rambam says, like number 8, the following people have no place in the Olam Haba, but they are judged forever for their terrible wickedness, for Chatzalsam, the Olam, Liomi, Alabi, forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. Haminim, and one of these people, groups of people, is the heretics. Chamishahim Nikra Minim, there are five kinds of people who are heretics, and he lists them. Someone who says there is no God, the Ein La'olam Manig, which really corresponds to the first Ikka we learned. Someone who says that there is a God, but there are two or three gods. That's the second Ikker. But says the Rambam, someone who says there is a God, but God has a body, is an apikoros. He's a min. He's a heretic. A min is a heretic. And he has no place in the world to come. God has a body. Now, the Rivad, commenting on the Rambam, jumps in and says, whoa, one second. Amar Abraham number 9. But I'm sorry, what does it mean? Why have you written this guy off as a heretic? Why have you written this guy as a heretic? Why are you so harsh on this guy? Come on, we don't even tell him the menu. Surely there were great people, maybe even greater than the Rambam, he ventures. Shehalchu Bazua Machshava that made this mistake, that thought this. The Fimashi Rabba Mikras. They read the Bible. It says God has hands and feet and all sorts of things. They just went wrong. But Yoise, and even more so, Mimashi Rabba Divrei HaGadus, and what it says in the Midrashim. It paints God in a very physical light. These things confuse people. This man is confused, Mr. Rambam. He's not a heretic. He's confused. Are confused people heretics? So the Rivad obviously believes that the Rambam thinks that you can be a heretic by mistake. And he takes issue with that. And says, I don't think you can be a heretic by mistake. You know, Anim Zmirot. You know Anim Zmirot that we sing in Shul? Little kid, they get a kid to sing Anim Zmirot at the end of Shul. It says in Anim Zmirot that God has black curly hair. Katie, you're on good. Okay. What's going on? That's why we give it to a kid, by the way. because we're frightened if we give it to a grown up and they'll understand the words, that it'll, you know, it'll confuse them, it'll take them up. Now, these days, of course, nobody understands anything they're davening anyway, so we could give it to a grown up as well. But optimistically, if the grown up understood the davening, so we give it to a kid. So the Rambam says that an apikoros, you can't be an apikoros unless you do it on purpose. The Rambam seems to say that you can. Or does he? Seems to be. He writes this guy off. He said, this guy made a mistake. Too bad. Too bad he's an apikoros. He's got no place in Olam Haba. Too bad he made a mistake. So what does this mean? Does this mean that, let's say a non-religious person, the non-observant person, they don't believe in God. Or they do believe in God, but they don't believe in Torah Min HaShamayim. Now, non-religious people, non-observant people, don't believe in Torah Min HaShamayim. They think it's silly. Okay? Not because they've thought it through and studied it and come to the conclusion they don't agree with it. But it's never really been taught it. They don't really understand what that means. They think it's just another, you know, piece of religious fundamentalist mumbo-jumbo. So what does that mean, according to the Rambam? The Rambam would say, okay, well, such a person who doesn't believe in Torah Min HaShamayim, okay, so they don't believe it because they've been miseducated. But the Rambam seems to be saying, well, it's too bad. Sorry, you're a heretic either way. There are some that explain the Rambam like this. Look at number 10. This is a very famous piece of Rabbi Chanan Wasserman. Rabbi Chanan Wasserman was one of the Gedolei Hador in Europe before the war. He was killed in the Holocaust by the Nazis. He says the following, number 10. The Rambam's view is that someone who believes God has a body is a heretic. The Rambam says, because of Shigadolim that many great people made this mistake, because they got confused by the Midrashim. And I want to say in the name of Rab Chaim Alevi, Rab Chaim Briska, who was his Rebbe, who was the grandfather of Rav Soloveitchik, one of the leading Rosh Yeshiva in Europe in the late 19th century, Mi Brisk, Vedasa Rambam, Rav Soloveitchik, Celia, Rav Chaim Briska, explains the Rambam like this. Ki akfira lo shayach shogeg. He wants to say that the Rambam says, when it comes to Shabbos, you can claim you're a shogeg, you didn't realize, nobody ever told you, okay, fine, so you didn't break Shabbos. But when it comes to kfira, he wants to say, heresy, you can't claim you're a shogeg. Dehamikol makam eino mamin, because at the end of the day, you just don't have the connection, you don't believe in what you have to believe. The Iyash Aliyas Bechal Yisrael Velo Emuna. You just can't be part of the Jewish people, seems to say the Rambam, without Emuna. The Ha'omrim B'Shmoy B'Zeh Aloshon, and they say, this is a really famous line, you'll hear it in other places, the Rav Chaim said in Yiddish, I don't know anyone here speaks Yiddish, but you'll work it out. Does anyone here know what a Nebach is?
Yeah.
You know what a Nebach is, right? You are now with a few occasionally. Okay. Right. Okay, fine. Alright, so you know what a Nebach is. So it says like this. He said in the following, Rav Chaim said like this. Devos is nebach apikoros. Is oicha apikoros? Someone who's nebach an apikoros is still an apikoros. There was nebach. I don't blame you that you don't believe in Torah Min HaShamayim, it seems to be saying the Rambam, because no one ever told you about that. I don't blame you that you don't believe in Tchias HaMesim, because no one ever told you, but it's too bad. I'm sorry, you're an apikoros. And you might bring a proof from this, because you could say all people who worship Avodah Zorah are mistaken. What about people who sacrifice their children? Aren't these people misled? You know? Haven't these people been badly educated? How far are you going to take the fact that you were badly educated and excuse yourself from things that are wrong? Yeah.
Right,
a bit condescending.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily true.
I understand that, but it is often true. Because even though there are people who disagree because they have a genuine question, in a large number of religious debates, often people just aren't talking the same language.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that they don't agree with each other is because they really don't understand each other, I suspect, in many cases.
So that's like when two differing opinions are like both equally valid. So it's okay that someone disagrees because like they don't understand where the other person is coming from. But I can think of like an exact situation. But I don't know, it just seems a little bit like, it's like almost like arrogant to assume that.
I understand what you're saying. Although I don't think the Rambam's saying that. What you're saying is, it's arrogant to think that just because this person hasn't had a yeshiva education, they can't have a genuine opinion on this particular religious issue.
Yeah, like why is their opinion less legitimate?
I'll tell you, well, that's not really what we're discussing, but I'll address your point. I think it's less genuine because of this. Because you can only judge Judaism from within Judaism. Can't judge any system from a, well, you can, I suppose, sort of say, I believe there are moral questions from outside. And that's not what people are normally doing. People are normally saying, that's silly, that doesn't make sense. Moses didn't have cars and lights. Therefore, what are you doing? You know, how can you believe terrorism in Hashemai? What do you believe God came down and gave them tablets of stone? Or like, what is a primitive belief? 99 out of 100 cases are people who've never studied the sources. They don't know what the sources actually say. They've never really spent the time to think it through. I'm not saying nobody has, but many, many people haven't. And therefore, just as in any situation where there is a very technical, complex, detailed situation, and somebody without any knowledge of that situation comes and gives an opinion, that opinion has very little validity. If you're trying to work out how to, you know, run the NASA space program, and some guy walks in the back of into NASA and says, you know something, guys? I don't know why you're making it's so complicated. I learned about this in school. It's twinkle, twinkle, little star. That's all you need to know. So just, you know, to forget about it. They'll just call security and get the guy taken out. If there's a group of doctors standing around a patient saying, you know, how can we treat this person's cancer? And a kid says, well, paint their hair green and it'll all be fine. So similarly, if you're debating religious issues, complex halachic issues, and which people really don't know, if you get people write letters to the paper and it's just like cringeably ignorant the way that they're writing them. Now, that doesn't mean we can be so arrogant as to say that no one else in the world has any arguments on us. And when we start talking to people who do know what they're talking about, and who do know the sources, and then you're absolutely right. But halavai, that was the case. If only that were the case in all cases. In most cases, it's not. That's not what the Rambam's saying. The Rambam, it seems to be coming down very hard on people who, through no fault of their own, don't understand or believe these fundamental beliefs. And Rabbi Chanan says, well, this must be because you're a Nebuchadnezzar Apikoros, and it's too bad. But listen, I can't finish it because I've got to get to the punchline. Look at number 11. Rabbi Chanan himself rejects that. About Kasha, so this is the problem. The Hatinuk HaMukul Ba'arisa says, what about a Tinuk Shanishma? A Tinuk Shanishma is a kid that grew up amongst the non-Jews. Okay? But Gamke Eloimona, just like he doesn't keep Shabbos, he also doesn't believe in God, he also doesn't believe in Torah Sinai, he also doesn't believe in the Israel. And everybody agrees that a classic Tinok Shenishba, a kid who was brought up as a non-Jew, is not blamed for not believing in the things a Jew has to believe. But Tinok Shenishba Lebein Akum, maybe Korban Ashkargot, it's called a Shogeg. But Eidin Akumoma is not called a rebel. And in fact, the Rambam himself, although I haven't got time for it all, the Rambam himself, when he talks about the Karaites rejected Torah Misina, okay, or rather didn't reject Torah Misina, they rejected the oral law, the way that Chazal expanded the oral law. They rejected the Gemara and the Talmud. And when the Rambam writes about the Karaites, he seems to say, fairly categorically, that the Karaites, the kids who were brainwashed by being brought up as Karaites, of course they're not Apikorsim. It's the people who started the religion of the Karaites. They're the ones who are Apikorsim. So it seems, one seems to actually see from the Rambam not the hardline position that we thought the Rambam would take, which is that Nebuch, you know, you're an Apikoros, so too bad. But actually the Rambam's a little bit more accepting. So I can't give you all the sources because I haven't got time. But if that's the case, why is the Rambam so hard on the fact that the guy thinks that God has a body? So what did he do wrong? So Rabbi Chanan explains, the guy who thinks that God has a body should know better. Use your brain, man. You think that God has black curly... You think, really, that God has black curly hair? Come on. You really think that? Because it says so? In other words, you have the ability, says the Rambam, to use your brain and come to a more sensible conclusion. Somebody who's been brainwashed hasn't got that ability. You can't expect somebody who has been brought up thinking, educated to think that Judaism is medieval and ridiculous, you can't expect them to, in 99% of cases, to actually readdress all the things that they've been taught to, unless their parents are really strong and they taught them to challenge and to really be intellectually honest and to be open-minded, then sometimes those kids start to challenge what the parents have told them. Which is ironic, it's funny, because sometimes it's exactly those parents that react badly when the children choose to become religious, because they say, how could you reject everything we taught you? And the answer is, no, actually, I accepted everything you taught me, which was to challenge everything that I hear and to make my own mind up about things. Which people don't really quite like. But anyway, that's beside the point. The point here is, it seems that the Rambam is saying something a little bit different from what we thought. And it may be that people, indeed, who have been brought up in completely non-observant circles, who really don't understand anything through no fault of their own about these key emuna issues, are also not apikrosim. Certainly the Raivad said, for sure they're not apikrosim. Even the guy who thinks God has a body is not an apikrosim, according to him. And this really is the position which is taken by pretty much all of the poskim today, that when it comes, just to summarise, and I did the last bit pretty quickly, but you've got the sheet there and you can have a look at it, when it comes to the actual mitzvahs themselves, avodas that people do, so for sure, nobody's doing anything on purpose if they don't know what they're doing, and even if someone told them what they were doing, no one can give tochacha today, and therefore they're shogeg. Therefore, there's no shilat, they're part of Klal Yisrael in every respect. And even when it comes to the basic emunas of Klal Yisrael, it sounds certainly from the Rambam and the Rosh Shulchan Aruch that seem to back this up again, that the children who've been brought up, people who have been educated not to believe, cannot be blamed for not believing. And therefore, from our perspective, that's very important. Because it means that we look out to the non-observant Jewish world, and we don't in any sense reject. Because why would we reject people? They're just as much part of Klal Yisrael. The fact that they don't have to keep mitzvahs or don't have to believe the things that Jewish people are meant to believe is a problem, but it's not a problem which is in any sense their fault. Therefore, it's not a problem which we should project onto them when it comes to Abein Adam L'Chaveiro. Abein Adam L'Chaveiro therefore will be owed just the same way to someone who doesn't keep mitzvahs because they're a shogeg. To someone who doesn't believe in Torah Mitzvah because they're a shogeg. And that's a very important halachic point as well to make. Of course there's a mitzvah to educate, there's a mitzvah of kiruv, there's a mitzvah if it's done properly, if it's done respectfully, if it's done intelligently, which is a big if, three big ifs, okay? But if it's done right, then of course we have a mitzvah to try and educate Klal Yisrael, because better that everyone should be doing mitzvahs, even though of course the risk is that they will do aveiras, really do aveiras. Okay, it's a risk which is worth taking. That's when we said Nath of Anishma, we accept the Torah, we accepted the risk and said we'd rather try, even if we sometimes fail. But certainly I think that should inform our perspective and just understand that there are real sources on this and real analysis. Okay, sorry it was a little bit hurried at the end, but I think we've covered what we need to cover. Okay, we'll leave it there.